Studio 1 in Berlin. Dort, wo Knowledge auf Entertainment trifft. Wo sich Kulturgrößen und Szenekenner über den heißesten Scheiß austauschen. Größer als der Hype. Realer als die Realität. Genau dort steht auch ein kleines Studio 2. Und von hier kommt die neue Ausgabe von Oh Schuhen, der Sneaker-Podcast mit Simon Buß und Amadeus Thüner.
Müssen wir eigentlich mal eine neue Intro-Musik machen? Nö, ne? Eigentlich nicht, oder? Ich finde die immer noch super.
Ich mag die noch.
Ich kann die mittrommeln. Ist auch schöner, als die mitzusummen, Simon.
Ich sag's dir. Das ist fast so. Ich glaube, das wird irgendwann so ein neues, also oder das zweite In the Air Tonight.
Okay, jetzt nimmst du den Mund sehr voll. Aber solange Phil Collins das nicht hört.
Ist richtig. Und damit hallo und herzlich willkommen zur 55. Episode des Oshun Sneaker Podcast. Eine erneute Schnaps-Episode, die 55. Und wir haben uns wieder was ganz Besonderes ausgedacht, wie glaube ich in allen Schnaps-Episoden davor schon. Als wären die anderen Episoden dazwischen jetzt nichts Besonderes. Sorry, da mache ich uns schlechter, als wir eigentlich sind. Ne?
Aber erstmal. Ich wollte gerade sagen, was war das denn jetzt gerade?
Was soll das denn bitte? Was ist das denn für eine Marketingform, die ich hier noch nicht kenne?
Was ist da denn hier gebacken, hör mal?
Mensch, Maya. Ja, hallo und herzlich willkommen, Amadeus. Wie ist es dir?
Soweit ganz gut. Wie geht's dir?
Ich kann nicht klagen.
Ja, schön. Mensch, gehen wir doch mal direkt ins Feedback der letzten Episode.
Dann tschüss, ne?
Nee, möchtest du der Welt noch irgendwas?
Wir haben uns alles gesagt.
Möchtest du der Welt noch irgendwas mitteilen? Kannst du gerne. An dieser Stelle kannst du grüßen, wenn du möchtest. Oder vielleicht auch. Doch, Mutti. Eine Sache müssen wir doch nochmal aufrufen. Und zwar, wie sieht's denn zur 55. Episode eigentlich mit dem aktuellen Stand deines Ausmistens aus?
Oh ja, es ist jetzt nicht sehr viel weitergekommen. Ich war letztes Wochenende nochmal im Keller tatsächlich. Ich habe mir den Bums nochmal angeguckt und habe dann aber auch relativ schnell wieder abgedreht und mir ein Stück Kuchen besorgt und Kaffee gekocht.
Muss ja auch mal sein. So viel ist noch nicht passiert, sagst du?
Nee, ich bin runter bei 65 nach wie vor ungefähr. Okay. Müsste unten nochmal 5 Paare aus dem einen Regal rausziehen, bei denen ich glaube, dass ich sie doch behalten möchte. Und müsste mich dann langsam mal darum kümmern, mir zu überlegen, wie ich sie loswerden möchte. Haben wir in der letzten Episode schon gesagt, eventuell fahren der Amma und der Erol und wer auch immer noch Bock hat mitzukommen auf eine Sneakermesse, machen einen schönen Tisch, kleinen Plausch. Wird ein lecker Nachmittag. Vielleicht mache ich ein paar Leuten noch eine kleine Freude mit einem Paar. Das muss ich mal sehen, aber das wird eh noch ein bisschen dauern. Okay. Ich hatte ja auch in der Episode schon angekündigt, dass ich, keine Ahnung, erstmal noch 2-3 Monate warte und das Ganze sacken lasse. Aber ansonsten hat sich nichts verändert.
Okay, gut. Sind wir da weiterhin gespannt und kommen, wie gesagt, zum Feedback der Episode 54. Es war ein großes Q&A. Wir haben viele verschiedene Fragen beantwortet, unter anderem auch zum Thema Preis-Schmerzgrenze. Und da hat Yogi Hollick via Instagram geschrieben, 520 Euro von StockX für den Union Black Toe im Dezember 2018 bezahlt. Und wenn man sich das heute mal anguckt, ist das auf jeden Fall ein ziemlicher Schnapper. Aber trotzdem 520 Euro. Und genau das ist auch, wo das meiste Feedback herkam. Leute, die gesagt haben so, hey, 520 Euro ist eine Stange Geld und eigentlich auch mehr, als ich eigentlich bereit bin auszugeben. Aber wenn dann der richtige Schuh um die Ecke kommt, bei dem man natürlich absehen kann, dass dieser Preis irgendwann das Doppelte sein wird, so dann ist es ja irgendwo wieder ein Schnapper. Es ist so mein Gefühl von dem, was wir an Feedback bekommen haben, durchaus bei vielen Leuten starker Kampf. Also die wenigsten haben wirklich geschrieben, so ja, 120 Euro, das ist die Grenze, mehr geht nicht, Resale zahle ich auf keinen Fall. auch die Kommentare gab es aber eigentlich eher weniger. Also es ist häufig dieses so, ja, ich muss das von Schuh zu Schuh entscheiden. Ja, aber verständlicherweise. Geht mir ehrlich gesagt nicht anders. Henry.stx schrieb zum Thema Dunk-Hype, das war ja auch eine Frage, was halten wir vom Dunk-Hype, dem aktuellen. Er schreibt, also ich finde den Hype berechtigt, jedoch ein bisschen blöd, wenn die, Zitat, Hyper-Beaster, Zitat Ende, sich einen Dunk kaufen, ohne irgendeine Ahnung von der Story dahinter zu haben. Zum Thema Aufbewahrung haben wir von Kicks-Mann noch das Feedback bekommen, Schuhkartons aus Platzgründen. Ja, wobei 8 bis 9 Paar immer frische Luft erhalten und als eine Art Deko im Zimmer stehen. Nach dem Tragen werden sie aber immer direkt gereinigt, bevor sie in die Kartons zurückkehren. Das ist eigentlich auch eine ganz gute Idee, weil wenn man sie sonst wieder aus dem Karton rausholt und sie dreckig sind, das ist ja nur traurig. Also von daher, das ist vollkommen verständlich. Ja, so das Feedback der Episode. Wer sich da jetzt berufen fühlt, irgendetwas zuzusagen im Sinne von so, oh, sehe jetzt aber ganz anders und oh, 580 Euro von Union Black Toe, da muss ich mal direkt in die DMs leiten. Tue dies gerne bei Instagram. Das ist dort natürlich gern gesehen. Ne? Das ist ja die Plattform zum Unterhalten. Da kann man sich austauschen, kann man Freundschaften knüpfen und derlei Dinge. Ne? Simon?
Für die 55. Episode haben wir uns, das habe ich eingangs schon gesagt, was Besonderes ausgedacht. Wir haben ein kleines Advertorial an Land gezogen und mit StockX gesprochen, die direkt auch Bock hatten, hier was mit uns zu machen. Und da haben der Amadeus und ich gesagt so, Mensch, Meier, wieso denn eigentlich nicht? Da lassen wir uns nicht lumpen und haben da auch jemand ganz tollen für gewinnen können, nämlich den CEO bzw. den Director of StockX in Europe. Das ist Derek Morrison, mit dem kommen wir gleich ins Gespräch. Vorher müssen wir aber natürlich noch eine Sache machen, die wir hier immer machen. Und mein lieber Amadeus, das dürfen wir nicht einreißen lassen, dass wir das vergessen. Deshalb jetzt noch, was tragen wir eigentlich am Fuß? What's on my feet today? Ich habe ein bisschen den inneren Steve Jobs kanalisiert und ein New Balance 992 GR am Fuß.
Boah, das und du, mein Lieber? Das wird ja echt langweilig bei dir. Das muss man an dieser Stelle wirklich einfach mal sagen. Also, so gern ich New Balance ja mag, alle 99er und auch dich in diesen grauen Schuhen, also dieser Running Gag ist ja echt irgendwann auserzählt. Ich möchte, das ist die kleine Hausaufgabe, die ich dir an dieser Stelle aufgeben möchte, nächste Episode von dir etwas ganz Außergewöhnliches hören. Tust du mir diesen Gefallen?
Ich bin sehr gespannt. 56. kriegst du.
Okay, da bin ich sehr gespannt. Ich meine, du bist ja eh dabei, die ganzen Sachen auszusortieren, hier und da zu gucken. Also von daher, du müsstest ja mittlerweile ziemlich guten Überblick haben von dem, was halt bei dir noch im Schrank steht. Also da bin ich jetzt sehr gespannt.
Das bekommst du, auf jeden Fall. Was hast du am Fuß? Okay.
Ich trage den Jordan 5 Fire Red. Mit einem lieben Gruß an die Jungs von The Few. Ein wunderbarer Schuh. Ich bin sehr froh, dass er wieder da ist. Auch näher an ein OG kann ein Retro heutzutage, glaube ich, nicht rankommen. Das Ding ist wirklich eine Wucht, natürlich halt. Und das hatten wir in der letzten Episode auch. Ein klobiges Modell, was man sicherlich bei über 20 Grad nicht wirklich an den Fuß ziehen kann. Aber jetzt hier gerade ist das Wetter jetzt nicht so schön, muss ich zugeben. Also von daher passt das sehr gut. Abseits davon, dass ich mich eigentlich eh nur im Haus aufhalte und den am Fuß habe.
Ich wollte gerade sagen, aber diesen Wetteraspekt, den brauchst du jetzt nicht noch irgendwie für dich zu nutzen.
Aber fand ich eigentlich einen ganz guten Punkt. Nee, aber eigentlich habe ich kann einfach nur nicht mehr meine Nike-Lette sehen und eine Adi-Lette und eine Lette oder was auch immer. Also ich brauche halt mal zwischendurch echt irgendwie was am Fuß, was so aussieht. Naja.
Und nachdem wir beide jetzt gesagt haben, was wir am Fuß tragen, kommen wir also zu unserem Gast, den Director von StockX Europe, Derek Morrison. Derek, first things first, what's on your feet today?
I'm not wearing any shoes right now. Really? I'm indoors. I'm in quarantine. You know, I think the cool answer would be that I have some Yeezy slides on or something like that, just to be like, yeah, I'm right in the moment. But that's just not the truth. I mean, look, I think I've always considered myself a Nike guy for my entire life, right? But I mean, just this kind of how a lot of us get into sneakers. My sneaker habits are really kind of across the spectrum. But it's not like the cool sneakerhead thing to say, but I wear Yeezy 350s more than any other shoe because they're just so comfy. And I'm an old man now. I'm a dad. And when I'm leaving the house, I'm just looking for the comfiest pair of shoes. So if I was wearing a pair of shoes indoors right now, they'd probably have a Boost sole on it. That's not just my rotation. So I'm sure we'll get to dive into like more of my sneaker trends and sneaker habits.
We'll do that in a second. People often say that you are the reason why we Europeans are even able to use StockX, which makes you kind of the good-to-go guy for us. But please do our listeners the favor and introduce yourself.
Yeah, I mean, for better or for worse, right? I guess that's quite a reputation to have. Yeah, so, you know, my name is Derek Morrison. I'm the Senior Director of Europe for StockX. I was the great honor of, I was the first person outside of USA employed by StockX. So, look, I've been a sneakerhead all my life. We can talk about pumps, we can talk about SBs, and I'm looking forward to talking about all of my history of sneaker fanaticism. As you can tell by my accent, I'm not from the UK, I'm not from Europe, I'm actually from Canada originally. And so being from the middle of nowhere in Canada, I was always kind of dependent on the resale world to get the shoes that I wanted, whether it was European releases from Soulbox back in the day or from stuff from Colette or, you know, trying to find connections in Japan. So the resale world was always the only way I could get the things that I wanted. And so when I discovered StockX and Campless before that, I was always really keen because when I heard Josh Luber's TED talk on the sneaker resale world, it was the kind of validation and vindication. You know, it was a peak TED talks time. I sent it to all my family that would kind of harass me for and ridicule me for my sneaker addiction and said, this guy is talking what I've been telling you all these years. And it's on TED now. So it's, you know, it's not just me saying it, why I'm insuring my sneaker collection. And so after that, I was, you know, kind of followed them. And I moved to Europe in 2011. I lived in Italy before I came to London. I worked in the wine industry for a long time. And, you know, I just started when StockX came about, it being based in the UK, I said, man, what a great opportunity. What a great platform. What a great business model. Why is this not optimized for Europe? They should really, really launch this here. And so my background, other than being a sneakerhead, is you know, I studied economics. Beyond sneakers, I've always been obsessed with how people buy and sell things in the marketplace and how people make their consumer decisions and how we optimize outcomes in marketplaces. So StockX was kind of a perfect blend of my nerdy obsessions in terms of economics and marketplace dynamics and consumer behavior, and also sneakers, something I've been passionate about my entire life. So I just got it. The whole model made sense to me. I understood why it was such an efficient way of trading sneakers, and how it was so much more improved on all the ways I had been up to that point buying shoes. And so I had reached out to them and just said, hey, you know, I'm a really big fan of the platform. I'm a really big fan of what you do, and I totally get it. If you're looking at the opportunity in Europe in any way, let me know how I can help. And I'd be really keen, A, because as a buyer or a user, it coming to the marketplace would benefit me to use the platform better, let alone to be able to be kind of the first leader brought on internationally to help bring it to life in Europe. So that's a bit of the context and backstory to it. But it doesn't take, you know, I think a lot of us probably had the same idea when we discovered StockX. I probably just was lucky to be earlier on in that conversation.
So you said you moved to Europe to work in the wine and champagne business, and then you moved over to StockX. Just one question from a wine fanatic to another. What made you move?
What made me move from wine? Well, you know, that's a good question. I mean, I'll tell you what, if you go on my Instagram, you look at what I drank last night. I mean, we still have, you know, we still have plenty of wine. So that doesn't leave you. Just as when I was working in the wine industry, I was still buying sneakers. So it's, you know, I think there's a lot more in common than they have. The secondary market for wine behaves the exact same way as the secondary market for sneakers. So for me, I guess in my life, I've always just tried to engage with things that are about who I am. And I've been really fortunate to work in two of my most passionate areas. And so, yeah, I guess it seems probably more like a departure to most than others. But, you know, my seller is still got the same stuff. I'm just the wine guy at the sneaker in the sneaker space as opposed to the sneaker guy at the wine space.
Great answer. So I know you travel a lot, not only since you started at StockX. You've been to Berlin for an event with Soulbox, and I guess you met Amadeus there for the first time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you've been to Sneakerness for Cologne, and you've had a few glimpses into the German sneaker scene. What do you think about it? What are there anything that differences or makes them kind of special in comparison to other sneaker scenes?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, a lot, right? You know, I think. There's a lot of obvious things we can talk about, but you know, Adidas and Puma's heritage in the country, I think, is a really big part of how Germany's always had its own identity in terms of sneaker culture. You know, growing up in Canada, I was a massive fan of Soulbox, you know, massive fan of Hikmet, and you know, some of my all-time grails that I even talked about with him were, you know, being a Reebok Pump guy, the Soulbox pumps that they did, the Omni-Lites, and then the 20th anniversary pumps that came out with, like, we're all friends and family releases in 2009. There was Soulbox did a pair, I think Undefeated did a pair, Colette did a pair, and you know, those are some of my ultimate grails that I look for all the time. So even before I came to Europe, I was greatly influenced by, you know, some of the sneaker culture coming out of there. But what I think, you know, in recent years that I've always really appreciated of Germany is it's the heritage, but also just the strength of going its own way. You know, I think whether it's even West and East Berlin have different sneaker histories, right? And you know, I think that's just really cool. It's such a rich country in terms of stories, history that informs tastes now. But if I want to think more general, like I just love the support for runner culture in Germany, whether it's kind of whether we're talking about ASICS or we're talking about I'm a big Diadora guy as well, and so when I go around to sneaker conventions, I'm always looking for just random obscure stuff that aren't hype, and so you find a lot of just great collectors that have kind of kept that going on, and you see that with lots of different models that resell at massive premiums on our platform that whether it's like a few, ASICS that are reselling, or some of the old Soulbox Diadoras, or whatever the different models may be. I think you see a lot of history and unique tastes. I wouldn't think of every market enjoys the hype products, but when I think of German sneaker culture, I don't immediately think of hype products as the defining taste. I think of a lot more heritage. I think a lot more about runners. I think a lot more about Hikmet and what his influence has been, and everyone else around him. I think the boutiques in Germany have really done some of my favorite products over the years, and you see that in terms of their resale and resonance now.
You already mentioned Reebok and Diadora, but was that the first sneaker brand who got you into the whole sneaker game? Or what was to make it more specific, what was the first sneaker who got you into the game?
Yeah, good question. So the first sneaker, so I played basketball growing up like a lot of us did. I don't think my parents said it to me, but the way I heard it was like, look, you're not good enough that we're going to spend $300 Canadian on a pair of Jordans for you. When I played basketball, I was wearing And1 Tai Chis, which and being Canadian, a Vince Carter fan, I've got a bid for a Vince Carter rookie card on StockX right now, waiting for someone to accept. Basketball was a big part of it. I was also really into skateboarding, the worst skateboarder you'll ever meet, but love skate culture and love skate shoes. <That's me. laughs> So, I was wearing a lot of Lacai, a lot of DVS, a lot of, kind of Globe sneakers. Rodney Mullen was big around then. So when I was a teenager, I was wearing a lot of skate shoes and a lot of And1 to play basketball in. Then when I got really more into kind of sneaker culture, as we would kind of think of it, it was really around, I think the first pair was, there was a Reebok Reverse Jam Monopoly edition that they did in like 2007, 2008 or something like that. That was, maybe it was long, even longer. That was a shoe that I was just like, that shoe's crazy. And I bought it. And then I kind of went down the rabbit hole from there. And so I was really big into SBs in the 2000s, kind of out of skate and then into sneakers. And I kind of came to Jordans later in my sneaker journey, as opposed to the beginning. So that speaks to some of it, if that makes any sense. So I don't know if there was one shoe, but And1 Tai Chis, I just ordered the 2015 Bait And1s. The red and blue apple. I just bought a pair on StockX 4 days ago, for less than retail. They're like 89 euros or something like that. So I was I was really excited. Really excited. So yeah, pretty obscure stuff. But SBs in that era were also really big for me.
What do you think about the latest hype around Nike SB?
I absolutely love it. I mean, I think you see the how much over the last couple of years the old SBs have gone up, which is when I moved to Europe, I sold about 50 pairs of sneakers to help fund my move to Italy. And it's the worst deal as anyone. I sold my uncle's for like $450 Canadian.
Really? We have to make sure. What's your size, by the way?
11 US, so 10 UK.
Oh, okay.
So was that 40, 45? So I sold What the Dunks for $700 Canadian. And that's, that's what, 500 euro? Dead stock. These are dead stock pairs. So some of those stuff like that. So for me, the SBs coming back really hurts because I can't. Now it's too. These shoes are too expensive to buy back again. Yeah. So I've got to just kiss them goodbye. But what I like about SBs is that they were always a great canvas. They were a really great canvas for and really creative. And they were just the collaborations were with incredible people that were inspiring then. If you're into art or if you're into the music scene, my MF Dooms, the De La Souls, those are two of my absolute grails that I still have. I was a big cassette player fan, so her Dunks, her Blazers, you know, there was just a lot of fun and energy in the designs then. And then, you know, you could critique that, like recent years of, like, where sneaker culture has been so mainstream and so hyped that some of the collaborations have gotten a bit safe or a bit too calculated. And what I like about this SB wave coming back is it seems, you know, they brought back, I think, the same creative director from the old era of SBs. And I think they're bringing back some of that fun, playful design into the collaborations. So that makes me really excited. And I think the SBs that they're releasing are good quality shoes. So
to get more into the detail, I must know, what do you think about the Ben & Jerry's SB Dunk and the 7-Eleven, which were coming out? Because they are really loud, they're really playful. Like you said, that's something you like about Nike SB. Are these shoes you like too?
Yeah. I mean, I think as a collector, you like anything that's kind of playful. There's a difference between what you want to collect and, like, what you enjoy to buy in terms of, like, putting into the collection. I think so the SB speaks to so much nostalgia for me, that the fact that it's playful and fun, and even if it's pretty commercially branded, I'm totally cool with that. That doesn't mean they're the shoes that you can rock outside all the time, especially now that it's not 2009. It's a bit of a different fit. But yeah, I guess I kind of look at them both ways. That's why I probably wear Yeezys more than anything, but I don't really think of those as my collector's items. I think of those as comfy shoes that I wear. Whereas these SBs, I'm like, oh, those will go really cool next to these other insanely loud shoes in my collection, if that makes sense. I don't know.
You already said that the N1 was the last item you purchased on StockX. Anything else you're really, really looking for? Are there many bids you've got out there, or are you checking out StockX and the different items all day long?
I have bids across the board on stuff, and I'll just go okay. and plant low bids for things and just see if they catch, because they do. So I've got a bid on a Vince Carter rookie card, basketball rookie card right now in the trading cards. That's really cool. I'm definitely going to buy that. I'm just holding out on the price right now. That's a nice thing with bids, is you put a bid out and you can say, hey, like, you know, let it sit for a little while and see if someone takes it. I do the same with lots of Diadoras. I've been trying to get all of the all gone Diadora N9000s that he's done. I mean, they've done other silhouettes, but those are the N9000s are the ones that I like the most. I got the 2007. I wore it when I was in Berlin last at Fashion Week. I spoke at Fashion Tech, and I had the 2007 all gone Diadoras, you know, 250 pairs, dead stock, came still with the original store tag on them, and I got them for €129. So I got them for like retail price, or maybe it was a bit more than that, but it was below retail or close to retail for a shoe from 13 years ago.
So you just said what was the last item, or which items you are buying on StockX. Amadeus and I, in our last or the episode before, we talked about the little battle with eBay and, of course, other competitors like Collect, Gold, Grail, whatever. But what is the USP of StockX? What makes StockX so special in this competition? And why is StockX the number one worldwide?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it is just down to our business model. I think, you know, I think that's really a key to so much of our growth and success. It's just, look, we didn't invent the stock market. The stock market's been around for hundreds of years, right? And it's an efficient way, or one of the, you know, maybe the most efficient way we've come up with for people to trade. And I think that's what silences so much of the noise. And that's why our prices are so low, because it's the efficient way for the market to dictate the value of that item. And you get all sellers and buyers centralizing for around that product in the same place. So you don't have to go through hundreds of listings to find the best seller for something or to find the best price. You can just go to one product page and all of that information is there for you. And as we've grown, it just makes it easier and easier for people to do it. So whether you're a buyer or a seller, you know, there's no easier place to go and buy or sell these items, just by the virtue of you can accept someone's money right now that's bid there. So if somebody listening has a 1998 Vince Carter rookie card that they want to sell, they can go, my credit card's, you know, called, go out there right now. Or the Packer, you know, Diadoras, you can go to that page right now and you can accept my bid and it charges my credit card and you just sell it. So you don't have to worry about the hassle of scams and all that stuff. I think that's part of it, right? Just that we've made it easier. And the reason it's easy is because we're sitting in the middle to guarantee that transaction. We're investing constantly in the verification process to ensure that you don't have to worry about that other person. You just have to worry what you want to pay for that item or what you want to get paid for that item. And we try to take care of as much of the rest. So that model is really just, I think, the key to a lot of that success. And look, you know, we were born out of sneaker culture. We know what the problems we're trying to solve, because I had to try to find a way to buy shoes from some guy in Japan when Atmos releases an exclusive there, or Swagger releases an exclusive. It's impossible. Now you just go on StockX and the shoe's there. We've got an office in Japan, so we're already connected to those sellers. So, you know, and then our whole idea is that, you know, be anonymous. You can just focus on yourself, focus on what you want. You have access to all these items in a way that has never been before, and it's easier than ever to transact that stuff. And we don't want to tell you what to buy. We want the market to kind of dictate the action. So we put all of the value for transparency on our product pages is really, you know, meaningful, because we're not telling you what you should buy. We're telling you what every single person ever has paid for that item, and you decide what you want to bid on it versus, you know, and then you decide what you want to sell it for. And I think that, you know, our pillars of that, I think, are really what have been the key to unlocking what's so much different about everyone else. That guarantee for authenticity, the guarantee that, you know, the transparency of information and the ability to transact anonymously allows you to be trusting in the platform, the ease of execution of your trades, and just the, you know, I think the relationship and trust we build over time.
Lately, StockX had a lot of things to cover. You had a data leak, and many people were a bit upset about how StockX communicated the problem. Then you increased the buyer fee and had this little battle with eBay. But most recently, StockX had to quit people due to COVID-19. So, Derek, what are the challenges StockX has to face in regards to the pandemic?
Yeah, look, I think the challenges that we face as a company are the same in this landscape as everyone else. You know, I think overall some of the things you talked about, you know, when I joined StockX 2 years ago, and I was, I think, you know, around 150, we had 150 employees or something like that by then. And, you know, you just look at the trajectory of the growth of this company. I mean, nobody expected it to be as big as it was, as fast as it was. And so we were always kind of catching up to our growth, and things like, you know, the data incident that you talked to, I mean, a lot of those things just speak to the fact that we were trying to keep up with our growth as a business, and that we continuing to invest in improving the safety and security of that. But, you know, we're really born out of the culture for the culture. And I think that's something that's really at the forefront of our mind. And we've always been trying to invest and be accountable to those things, because we know that those commitments to our users is ultimately what's going to maintain us as a business. As we've grown, you know, the way that businesses function is kind of really challenging. You know, you look at how you go from kind of growth at all costs to having to create more sustainable growth. I think that's something that's been a real challenge for us to navigate as a company in terms, and the kind of COVID landscape is, you know, I think one of the most important effects on that, right, is the entire climate goes. If you can't survive as a business, then, you know, there's nothing else to support you. So I think, you know, we're continued to try to offer the most you know, the most dedicated service we can to our users, and to with that growth we have to invest in the business as well to make sure that it's sustainable. And you know, I think that's where things like the fees that we've had to put into the marketplace are really not about profiteering. It's about really making sure that we're creating a sustainable company that allows us to continue to offer this. And I think if you look at the overall macro landscape for businesses, especially in this era, you know, that we're very fortunate to be in as relatively strong a position as we are to maintain the way that we have. And so, you know, we're very fortunate in this digital era that that so much of the business is transferred to online, you know, our plights and the hardships we've experienced as a company are very challenging for sure. And you know, to go through that at any state is a difficult thing for business. But at the end of the day, we're very lucky that you know, we're not in some of the same conditions as many other businesses who are having a relatively much harder challenge with the way that this crisis has affected the global economy.
Derek, do you already see changes in the resale market or in the customers' behavior or users' behavior of StockX due to COVID-19?
You know, I think there's a few different things. You know, I think the sneakers as a commodity are much more stable than what we've seen in global exchanges. So we haven't seen, you know, any significant reduction in the value of products. If anything, you see some products skyrocketing in value due to Michael Jordan documentary and other different kind of cultural factors. Yeah. So prices have held strong, but I think, you know, what you definitely are undeniable are in countries like Germany, Italy, France, you know, just the effect of coronavirus on people's ability to leave the house or ability to go to work. These have an undeniable effect on how the marketplace can function and whether people can even sell or get shoes, right? So, you know, in terms of the stability of the marketplace, you know, we've had to navigate all these, you know, the impacts in our respective regions where we operate to make sure we comply with government orders and compliance measures to ensure that we're putting safety first and operating in a healthy environment for our team and for our customers. That's been something that's always fluid and continues to be fluid in every region that we operate based on the nature of this crisis. But when we look at our customers, there's definitely been challenges for people to be able to just get shoes or get shoes to us that have been different in Italy than you've experienced in Germany, even in different parts of Germany. So it's definitely something that's affecting the entire planet that you know, anything in terms of physical form we're certainly affected by. But what's interesting is to see, you know, that the actual commodities themselves are more resilient in terms of price than the average stock market. So, you know, I think if we look at the 500 most popular shoes, I think is some note that I had from January and February, and you look at the average prices over the last month versus the beginning of the year, and there's, you know, there's very little movement, less than 4%, or some are the price is actually the Meridian price is actually higher. So I think that's really interesting. I've kind of joked with my wife that we shouldn't be buying gold bullion. Let's buy some sneakers and you know, sit on some 85s Jordan 1s and ride out the crisis. So we say that in jest, but you know, really, I mean, when you look at the stability of the commodity, I don't think it's crazy to say that like it might be another safe asset class to invest in at some point as it becomes more and more mainstream. People do it with wine. People do it with art. You see reports every month from some equity firm talking about how strong these kinds of assets are performing as an investment class. And I think of sneakers as a, you know, piece of cultural consumption and less so as an asset. But I do recognize the potential there.
Something which our community wanted to understand, and maybe you can put some light on it and explain it, is that they don't really understand the luxury tax which will be added, even when StockX already tried to bring the European sellers together with the European buyers. Maybe you can explain it a little bit.
So the luxury fee is something that for me, it's one of the biggest priorities for Europe for sellers, because we put it there to ensure that we could allow people to continue selling those items if they wanted to, and they could adjust their prices as accordingly. That fee is because we incur import costs in various parts of the world depending on where those shoes go, and we didn't have a way at the time, and still don't, of capturing those costs at the point of their delivery at entry. We're working on it to remove it, but it was essentially the fee was our way to continue to allow people to make the choice over whether they sell those items or not in Europe. But we totally recognize and totally focus on getting rid of that fee in a way that's sustainable for the business. And it's something that's one of my biggest priorities, because we know that it just essentially makes it unfeasible or like uneconomical to sell those items on the platform. But it's never been about capturing fees erroneously. It's been only about to kind of capture fees to ensure that we're covering the costs that we incur on those. We don't profit at all from that fee. But what we know that it does affect is people's trade velocity and volume in that price range. We're not at a perfect point yet in terms of our experience in Europe, because we're still building this as we go. And we've been really focused on how we retain a global marketplace because of the international nature of where products are released and put, that we need to really ensure that we don't cut that off. And that's unprecedented. There's no marketplace that does that. And so we're having to solve problems in e-commerce that have never existed before, which is exciting and inspiring, but it also creates these kind of barriers. But you know, if I look back to where we've come in a year and a half and the improvements we've made so far in terms of starting at a place where if you bought something on StockX, you know, a year and a half ago, it was, and you're paying $30 in shipping, you were only able to transact in US dollars. You're having to pay your customs and duties at the door when it arrived to you, to where we've got to now, to try to factor in this global marketplace. So it's not perfect yet, but it's certainly everything that are the pain points for our customers are the biggest priorities for us. And there's nothing more a priority for me than for us to get the full solve there. And I can't say too much more specifically about it, but I'm hoping it's very much in the near future that we'll have that fixed.
Okay, maybe one thing you can explain as well is the idea of letting people know how the StockX market in Europe is located. So you're sitting in London, and then you got an authentication center in the Netherlands, but sometimes they have to ship things in the US. Maybe you can explain that as well.
Sure. So we have an authentication center in London, and this is where our kind of European headquarters office is. This is where we started. The office started in my office when it was just me,
which is perfect.
Me in coffee shops running around talking to sellers, and then we expanded. We opened an authentication center there. We have our London office, and then last year we opened a verification center in the Netherlands. So now the idea for that was, we always intended to have two in Europe, because just the freight coming from various parts of continental Europe is much much cheaper to go to the Netherlands than to go to UK, for example, right? So that's we always want to get our authentication services as close to our sellers as possible, because that allows us to get the items faster, to verify them before we send them to the buyer faster, and allows us to then pay out our sellers faster as soon as we verify the item. So those are the two there. And then we have globally, we have, you know, a number of facilities in the US. We have an office in Japan, that's kind of where our geographic spread is. We have a small team in Canada now as well.
Sounds good.
Preparing for the future, right? Moving back to Canada, there's now an office.
Europe's definitely home. But that's where, you know, we have, we're really trying to make sure that we're getting into the markets and improving our kind of local expertise. So we have, Amadeus, I know you know Lena, who's our German marketing manager, and so making sure that we're able to kind of start to deliver more, not only in terms of resolving the mechanics like fees and things like that for market, but also for language, and trying to make sure that we're as improving the experience as much as possible across Europe, as we again really try to make this as global as possible, as we know sneaker culture is global.
For your personal side, do you think sometimes it's unfair how much shit and shitstorms StockX gets?
In terms of just like, you know, like, look, the sneaker internet is undefeated, man. Trolls are gonna troll.
That's right.
Look, I think
we know what you're talking about.
Look, I think you have to our motivation and my motivation when I go to work is that I'm constantly trying to think of how can we improve this for the community and for the culture to offer something better. And, you know, we're having to build it. I mean, we're 4 years old. You know, we've been live in Europe for 18 months. And I think, you know, we know that we need to, we are our biggest critics. We're focused on things we need to improve, and we want to make sure that we're accountable to users. I think more people, as we see from our growth, like us than don't like us. And I think that, you know, some people just like to be trolls, and some people have, you know, difficult experiences that I take very earnestly. I go through forums, I go through my Instagram. People send me DMs about issues that they're having or you know, feedback that they think that they've that have gone really well. So we don't try to dismiss it as haters going to hate. I think that, you know, there's a lot of people that have genuine issues that need to solve, and we are continuing to try to invest in finding ways to serve them and solve those and make things better. But, you know, I think, you know, look at when StockX came out, if you were a reseller before StockX, you were able to sell shoes for a lot more money than you could now. But I think now what we've done is we provide a service to sellers, but we've also democratized it for buyers. And I think that's what's led to our success. So I think a lot of people resent StockX for, they say, killing the market, or we don't control the market. We help facilitate the market, and we reflect what the consumer demands. And so the prices aren't set by us. Prices are set by buyers. Prices are set by buyers and by sellers.
True.
And
yeah, that's right.
If you can't agree on a price, then the trade doesn't happen. But if
you can use it or you don't use it, it's up to you.
So, you know, I think I don't want to say that, you know, the haters don't matter, because I think it you know, we need to, and we really are committed to listening to people. That's how I started this in Europe, is I just went out and I took people who used the platform and I took them for coffee. And I just asked them what needed to be better and what worked and what didn't. And that's how we built all of the features to improve it. And that's how we continue to build the features for sellers and for buyers. I think the squeaky wheel, you know, the trolls are sometimes the loudest, right? The vocal minority sometimes that get a lot of the attention. But, you know, I think we challenge ourselves to rise to what we know we have to do. And, you know, I think the net is, you know, the net is that it doesn't, you know, we see the growth, we know we're continuing to invest in, and we continue to see the rewards of those efforts. But, you know, we're not going to sit here and say that we've got it all perfected, but we know that we're committed to improving and delivering that and taking all feedback on board when it's constructive. But, you know, I tell you what, though, I laugh so hard. Some of the, you know, sneaker internet is undefeated, man. And sometimes it's just funny. But if you look at, you know, what we continue to do, I think we're having a much more positive impact than a negative. And, you know, look at charity campaigns and things that we do with that and the people we get to work with. You know, I'm not too fazed. If anything, I've seen in Europe more people championing and saying the opposite, saying, what are you talking about? Like, I use StockX every day. I got paid out in 24 hours, or, you know, my shoes came, I got my Court Purples faster from StockX than I got them from Nike. You know, we want to continue to improve those things. You know, we're proud when we deliver on it, and we challenge ourselves to rise to the things we need to do better. So, sneaker internet's funny, man.
You already said that the kind of charity events you did over the last years, and we record this interview right in the middle of your support of the World Health Organization. Please tell us something about this specific charity event.
Yeah, I think one of the things that it's really exciting about StockX is that we have such an amazing community. We have such an amazing culture globally. That, you know, we're constantly trying to think of, you know, how do we harness the energy of our community to affect things in a positive way, whether it's a cause or, you know, how can we use our marketplace for positive impacts. And so, you know, one of the biggest ones we did in the past was the first one we did with Eminem for his hurricane relief efforts in 2017 that raised almost $500,000, working with a bunch of different celebrities. Recently, we did the Colette charity campaign with Sarah Andel.
Yeah, and I didn't win.
Sorry, man.
What was going on there?
I didn't win either, sadly. That's okay, one of my absolute grails.
Then it's fair.
One of my absolute grails. I've held the shoe, and I don't get to keep it.
I love that. This Jordan 1 Storm Blue with a Colette, and I really like Colette as a store, and the impact which had it on the whole scene and the industry as well. 100%. And that this shoe is so great.
We could do, if you want to do a Colette podcast episode, I'd be very happy to come back and just talk about how amazing
that
business was.
Yeah.
But yeah, so with, you know, for 30 pairs of Sarah Andelman's friends and family Jordan 1, we raised, you know, almost 200,000 euros for Oceana. And so with the current global crisis that we're in, we definitely wanted to try to find a way to contribute to the fight against it. And so we were able to, you know, speak to our entire kind of our network of collaborators and partners, people like Sarah Andelman, you know, people like Eminem. He's put up Jordan 4, Carhartt, Eminem, friends and family. He's donated that. In Germany, Hikmet was able to put an unreleased sample pair of one of his Sonora shoes. Kelvin Colt put a number of pairs from his personal collection, as well as one of the outfits from that he wore in one of his music videos. And, you know, I think it was just really trying to get our network and our friends and family of StockX to find a way to use our community to do some good. So it was people bringing out their own items from their collection to donate. And then, you know, people could go and bid, I think it's, you know, 10 or 11 euros or something like that per ticket to be entered to any one of these items that they want. And there's an incredible selection of prizes, from Messi's boots that he's worn in match to the Eminem stuff I've talked about, Sarah Andelman, Futura. I mean, it's just an incredible number of collaborators.
This Sean Carter Reebok that signed by Jay-Z himself. How crazy is that? And what I said, what I see in the list was the gold ring from Trinidad James. Shout out. Crazy.
it's a wild mix of people who've contributed, you know, basketball teams, you know, Wilfred Zaha.
Hey, Kobe jersey as well, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. So far, you know, I think we're, what, 2 days into the campaign. You know, we've raised over $200,000 in like the last two days already. And so, you know, it's just, again, that speaks to the power of the community. And again, we're facilitating that. It's the community that's really doing it. It's the community of the creators that are that trust us to take their own personal collections to the market to help energize our community for a good cause. And so, you know, that's a really big something that, you know, I'm personally really proud to be a part of, and have been, you know, we've raised over, you know, a million, you know, almost we've raised over, you know, almost half a million euros this year in the last 12 months just in Europe, or just since I've been with the company in Europe.
And great, so that's, achievement.
You know, I think that that's it just speaks to the power of the community as much as us. Again, we're just facilitating it and trying to harness that energy to have a positive impact. And you'll see more charity campaigns in the future as we continue to try to find ways to do this. And it's really exciting to be a part of. And this is a pretty cool one for obviously meaningful cause. So the proceeds are going to you know, the United Nations coronavirus support fund, you know, in for a lot of personal protective equipment and things like that for people on the front line. So very much a global initiative.
StockX is a young company, 4 years old in Europe since 2 years. You said it's a work in progress. You're working on a lot of things right now to make the progress. You're a charity company as well. You're doing charity and fundraising money, 500K in Europe in the past 12 months. So what's next? What are the next steps? What are your next goals? What are you trying to achieve?
Sure. I mean, you know, we talk a lot about Europe. I think we're really proud of where we've come and what we've been able to do in terms of delivering improvements.
Absolutely.
To the market in so far, especially in Europe. But as we talked about, we're not finished yet. We want to still continue to find ways to improve the experience, make it more relevant locally, make sure that we're able to be as offer as good a service as we possibly can to all of our users, whether they're buyers or sellers, especially in Europe. That's where I focus most of my energy. And so there's a lot of things we need to improve in that. We talked about the luxury fee. There's, you know, other things to optimize to help us connect there. You know, IPOs, we want to continue to evolve this and continue to work with brands and creators and bring their products directly to market. And I think there's a lot of different ways we can do that. And I think there's a lot of ways you'll see that come to life. We'll continue to expand internationally as we want to continue to try to find ways to reach people in their own markets. This is a truly global culture, and you'll see that continue to happen. As I mentioned, we've got a small team in Canada, and we're going to continue to try to find ways to go there. And again, the biggest thing is just continuing to listen to our customers and speak out and find out like what are the issues that they have and what are the things that they would like to see on the platform and what are the improvements that they need. And there's a lot of, some of this very technical in terms of whether it's relating to payments or all kinds of different just functional aspects of the website and things that we need to build, or and some things are much bigger about how we curate product and how we help people discover them when they're browsing on the platform. So it's everything. And we're constantly evaluating every corner of the business to find out how we can improve and making sure we're listening to people's advice on things that they need. So man, it's crazy to see how far we've come in such a short period of time, especially when I think of where we were in Europe when I started.
Yeah,
But it's all it's inspiring how much more opportunity there is to continue to invest in these markets, and knowing how much low hanging fruit there is and things that we can continue to improve. So it's the work's never done. The work is definitely never done.
I guess so.
One last question from my side. Are all these fruits you're trying to pick fully digital, or are there any plans to move to brick and mortar, for example? So you want to get close to the customer. I guess you can get the closest you can get to the customer by his smartphone. So you're absolutely in touch with the customer. But to get hyper local and to get all the fruits you'd like to pick, are there any ideas or any plans, or will it stay digital?
Yeah, so we have a facility, we have a retail space in New York, and we've had a pop-up that we've had extended for a number of months in London. Obviously, this is all before coronavirus and COVID-19 happened, because that's obviously changed and going to change the way that bricks and mortar retail functions. Maybe forever.
Absolutely.
But up until then, we had been running a drop-off in London with also some other kind of different workshops and cultural programming that we were doing in there, and that's something that we want to continue to assess and see how StockX can exist in real life, because it's also we're conscious of that's why it's great when we connect with you guys, whether it's there or here on this call. We want to. We're a bunch of there's people like me, a bunch of people like me that are just sneakerheads that are happy to just wax and talk on sneakers. We're not some faceless digital business out there. We're a bunch of and so I think it's nice to just kind of connect with people and wax on it and show them that that we get it a little bit, and sometimes a retail location is a great forum to create experiences that benefit our culture. And so we had a lot of great successes with our facility in London that we closed only because of the pandemic. And so when everything blows over, it's hard to know what the world will look like then, but we'll continue to evaluate that. And when we're allowed to meet people in real life again, you can bet that that's something that we'll be considering. We did a big thing with Sarah Andelman last year in France, which is called Stock Exchange Paris, which was a lot of fun. And, I think finding meaningful ways to create experiences in the communities that we operate in is something that's really important to us. It's just, right now that's something beyond our control.
Yeah, that's right. Hopefully we can meet each other all really soon again. And Derek, thanks for the deep dive into the whole history of StockX, especially for Europe. It was really, really interesting to get all this information, and we're really looking forward to how StockX will evolve and develop the whole thing in the near future. And I guess this won't be the last time we talk to each other. So please let us know when there are new things coming up,
Yeah, you bet.
you got our telephone numbers. Yeah, just drop a small message or whatever. Slide in our DMs.
Yeah, and wine. We gotta get the wine. We gotta get the wine show going.
Yeah, true.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Derek,
I'll pick a good bottle of Riesling. Speak to you soon, man.
Yeah, Derek, many thanks. Stay strong. Stay healthy.
Hey, thanks, guys. You too.
Bye bye.
Stay healthy. Bye bye.
Bye.
Ja, das war unser Interview mit Derek Morrison, dem Director von StockX in Europa. Ich finde es sehr, sehr spannend, wie er durch den Wein nach Europa kam und es dann nach ein paar Jahren zu StockX geschafft hat.
Das ist auf jeden Fall ein spannender Weg, das muss ich auch sagen. Und diese N1-Geschichte finde ich sehr sympathisch.
Lieb ich. Und wenn ihr nett seid und vielleicht nochmal bei euch im Regal bzw. im Keller nachschaut. Was hat er von Vince Carter gesucht? Die Rookie-Card, ne?
Ja, genau.
Wenn ihr da noch was irgendwo findet, ich glaube, ihr würdet Derek zum glücklichsten Kind auf dem Kinderspielplatz machen. Ganz großartig. Ich feiere es wirklich so, die Leidenschaft, die man ihm da anmerkt, was Reebok betrifft, was sein Interesse an, fand ich mega, wusste ich gar nicht an, so überhaupt an Europa betrifft, also Soulbox Collabs, A Few Collabs, die ganzen Diadoras, das ganze Euro-Running-Deck eigentlich so einmal durchdekliniert, ist ja auch nicht das Erste, was man erwartet von jemandem, der vor ein paar Jahren, um im Weinbau zu arbeiten, aus Nordamerika rübergekommen ist. Finde ich mega spannend und dann natürlich auch das, was er zu StockX selbst gesagt hat, finde ich eigentlich soweit auch verständlich. Du baust ein Business auf. Das ist ein Business, was sich in einem stetigen Wandel betrifft, gerade wenn es erst 4 Jahre alt ist. Und ich muss selbst sagen, ich habe selbst gegründet. Und das, was Benny und ich damals mit unserer Produktionsfirma in knapp 3 Jahren aufgebaut haben, ist auch eben nicht mehr als eine Durchgangsstation gewesen. Entsprechend finde ich auch seine Aussage zum Thema Luxury Fee ganz gut. Man versucht diese Gebühren, die man eben hat, vom Sprung aus den USA nach Europa in irgendeiner Form zu wandeln und umzubauen und auch schon direkt zu sagen, so, yo, das ist nicht das Ende der Fahnenstange, auch da wird weiter optimiert, finde ich, ist eigentlich eine ganz gute Aussage, mit der man dann auch arbeiten kann, dass sich das in Zukunft für uns auch hier noch weiterentwickelt und wir uns mit dieser, oder dass die Luxury-Fee, dieses Prozent nicht in Stein gemeißelt ist. Also ich fand es ein sehr schönes Gespräch und am Ende dann natürlich noch zu hören, was an wohltätigen Zwecken alles auf einmal auf diese Plattform gezogen werden kann, mit was für Unterschriften. Ich habe nochmal geguckt, so ein S.Carter in Deadstock kriegt man in der Regel zwischen 50 und 80 Euro nachgeworfen. Also ich sag mal so, ist jetzt nicht das beliebteste Modell, aber mit der Unterschrift von Jay-Z hat das natürlich dann auch schon mal wieder einen ganz anderen Wert, ne? Finde ich grandios.
Ich finde das mega, dass sie solche Sachen überhaupt zusammengetragen bekommen. Also da merkt man auch einfach, was für einen Impact StockX hat und den Ausspruch zu sagen, hey, wir sind nicht perfekt, aber wir sind auch noch ein junges Unternehmen und dass StockX natürlich auch kein Unternehmen ist, was sagt, so, oh, Geld will ich jetzt nicht verdienen, das dürfte ja wohl auch klar sein, aber ich finde es gut, dass Derek auf jeden Fall so reflektiert ist zu sagen, ey, es ist noch nicht alles perfekt, aber wir fuchsen uns da rein und wir machen und tun und sehr spannend zu sehen, was für Pläne es da auf jeden Fall für die Zukunft gibt und wie man halt eben auch mit dem Feedback arbeitet, ne? Also das zeichnet ja am Ende des Tages auch ein gutes Unternehmen aus, zu sagen, hey, wir hören auch auf das, was da draußen gesprochen wird, selbst wenn es vielleicht mal ein paar herrschere Töne hat und die sind ja auch in gewissem Maße bei vielen Dingen ja auch gar nicht unberechtigt gewesen, das darf man nicht vergessen.
Ganz genau. Und das ist eben auch das, was jetzt dann am Ende zählt. Derek hat gesagt, dass das ein Work in Progress ist. Das ist schön, dass man da auch als Unternehmen dann auf diese Dinge exakt eingehen möchte. Auf Worte müssen dann Taten folgen. Und dann werden wir in den nächsten Monaten und vielleicht auch Jahren natürlich dann die Augen offen halten, inwieweit sich genau das verändert. Es sind ja große Pläne genannt worden. Und da bin ich jetzt zumindest sehr gespannt. Und ich bin auch gespannt auf euer Feedback auf die 55. Episode, insbesondere natürlich das Interview, was wir jetzt gerade hier mit Derek Morrison von StockX geführt haben. Wie sind eure Meinungen zu den einzelnen Themen, zu seiner Sammelleidenschaft, zu den Plänen mit StockX und natürlich auch, wie viel Bock habt ihr auf diese Charity-Aktionen? Was wäre euer Favorit? Und zu guter Letzt natürlich, falls ihr eins der Produkte habt, das Derek angesprochen habt, lasst uns auch definitiv eine Nachricht da.
Und damit vielen Dank, dass ihr bei der 55. Episode mit dabei wart. Ihr könnt alle Episoden wie gewohnt kostenlos auf Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Deezer, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Podigy und bei allen anderen Streamingdiensten hören. Und wir würden uns natürlich sehr freuen, wenn ihr Oshun dort abonniert, wo ihr Podcasts am liebsten hört. Schaut auch auf Facebook und Instagram.com/Oshun Podcast vorbei und interagiert mit uns und der Community. Seid ein Teil. Sehr freuen wir uns auch über 5 Sterne und eine positive Bewertung bei Apple Podcasts. Einen Shoutout würden wir hier gerne mit euch teilen. Flipti schrieb vor einigen Wochen den Zweien zuzuhören, macht wirklich Spaß. Ich habe seit gut einem Jahr starkes Interesse an Sneakern und habe dazu noch den passenden Podcast gesucht, mit Oshun dann auch direkt ins Schwarze getroffen. Weiter so, Jungs. Dafür vielen Dank, Flipli, das freut uns sehr und tut uns einen Gefallen und supportet den Podcast und erzählt mindestens einem Freund oder einer Freundin, die sich für Sneaker und Streetwear interessiert, von uns. Show some love. Dankeschön und wir hören uns in der nächsten Episode wieder. Bis dahin. Macht's gut.
Macht's gut, wir hören uns. Tschüss. Ciao, ciao.
Schuhen, der Sneaker-Podcast mit Simon Buß und Amadeus Thüner. Alle zwei Wochen auf iTunes, Spotify und YouTube.